The Bolsheviks proved quite adept at sloganeering people's popular concerns. The Bolsheviks worked very stubbornly and without let-up to spread their ideas amongst the masses. This included in the factories and included amongst the peasants, but especially in the factory benches. Every day they worked ceaselessly. The slogan, "All power to the Soviets," something very well known and associated with Lenin's April thesis, took an enormous cachet in this era, but its meaning was very ill-defined, and it's a slogan that belonged not only to the Bolsheviks, but also to the left socialist revolutionaries, anarchists, and also to a couple of the Menshevik internationalists. In the context of growing support for the Bolsheviks, Lenin concluded that internationally as well as nationally, the time had become ripe for them to seize power. He blitzed the Central Committee with demands that it prepare an insurrection, even threatening to resign when he suggests that history will not forgive us if this opportunity to take action is missed. Lenin then returns from Finland. Later on, in November, he persuades the Bolshevik Central Committee to commit to the overthrow of the provisional government. Lenin then becomes increasingly involved in political affairs and also becoming very important in kind of changing the course of what's to come. On the 24th of October, military units of Red Guards take control of vital strategic points around Petrograd. On the 25th of October, one day later, Lenin appears in public for the first time since the July days to proclaim for the first time the provisional government had been overthrown. We should also be mindful that the Bolshevik Party at this point did indeed include some disputes and bickering. Kaneva and Zinoviev are opposing Lenin's action. On 9th of October, we have the creation of a military revolutionary committee, the so-called MRC, to resist the transfer of power. On the 23rd to 24th of October, Kerensky moves against the Bolshevik printing press as a prelude to shutting down this MRC, which gives some of the other leading Bolsheviks, including Trotsky, the pretext to strike back. Kerensky then took steps to strengthen his forces. He ordered garrison units not to move without permission, on the 23rd of October, to only obey orders signed by the committee. When on the night of 23rd, 24th of October, when the government shut down the Bolsheviks' printing press, Trotsky then declared action was imperative to prevent Kerensky crushing a revolution. And then on the 24th of October, the Red Guards took control of strategic points, bridges, railway stations and other key points, and unable to muster a military force that was credible in response, Kerensky fled. Lenin then emerges from hiding on the 25th of October, and on that same day, the Second Congress of Soviets opened. On the night of the 25th of October, the Winter Palace was stormed, and the Bolshevik government, and the provisional government, I should say, was arrested. The Second Congress of Soviets then opens on the 25th. About 300 out of the 650 to 670 deputies were Bolsheviks, and so ratification and seizure of power to rely on the support of the 80-25 left SRs. The Mensheviks and the SRs denounced the overthrow of the government's declaration of civil war and demonstratively walked out of this. Trotsky responds to his famous quip, "Go where you ought to be, into the dustbin of history." In Moscow, the Bolsheviks had made no preparations for the seizure of power, not setting up a military revolution committee, nor strengthening the factory-based Red Guard, their army. The command of the military district instead put up spirited opposition when Soviet powers declared on the 25th of October. The seizure of power is something that's really vexed and interested historians for many reasons, often presented as a conspiratorial coup against the democratic government. It is indeed noteworthy, though, that the government didn't really have too many supporters. Few military officers came to its aid, many despised Kerensky for what they saw as a betrayal of Kornilov, and the coup would not have taken place had it not been for Lenin and his consistent urging in the Bolshevik Party to strike when the time was right. Thanks to the decision of the moderate socialists to postpone the Second Congress, his plans to present the latter with a fait accompli was achieved. But the insurrection and its execution was entirely the work of Trotsky. This was something that was actually disguised as a defensive operation to preserve the garrison and the Petrograd Soviet against what he called the counter-revolutionary machinations of the provisional government. Some historians have speculated to what extent the provisional government is already on its knees. Steve Smith, in his recent book Empire and Crisis, suggests that the provisional government had expired even before the Bolsheviks had finished it off. An interesting conclusion there to think about when we think about the trajectories and the influences behind the seizure of power in October, November 1917. Now, I think at this point it's worth just stressing a few things quite quickly. By this point, of course, the Bolsheviks had taken power. but it wasn't clear that the revolution itself had been achieved. In fact, actually, 1917, you might think, was in fact the a step rather than the final point on the revolutionary path in Russia. It's indeed followed by a very brutal civil war that goes on for several years. The Bolsheviks, unlike some of their rivals, sought an end to the war, but the peace that follows at Brest-Litovsk in 1918 was very, very punitive, and they inherited a country with enormous demographic problems. After 1917, we have population decrease as a result of the war and ongoing crises, famine, disease and starvation. Soviet power was established very quickly in the capitals, especially Petrograd, but it's a different story in the countryside where resistance goes on for some years. Peter Holquist, a very significant historian, is one of several who's considered the impact of the violence and the death of this period. He calls it, in a very influential phrasing, an epoch of violence. During the Civil War, the Bolshevik Party starts to change exponentially. It expands hugely in terms of membership and in terms of state power. This is also the period in which the Cheka is established, the secret police, in December of 1917. Now, to talk in much more depth about the Civil War, I think would mean I have to do another recording, simply because the Civil War is such an important and indeed complicated event. So what I'm going to do now is just kind of throw out there a few questions to think about when you think about the revolution. Firstly, we might think about the views of Russian history. Was Russia moving towards a rule of law system before 1914, or was it becoming a police state? We might think about the trajectory in Russia in the longer term, thinking about some of those social changes I mentioned in the preceding two clips. We might also think at this point about the War of 1914 and where this fits into all of it. Did the war in 1914 cause the revolution, or was social unrest coming anyway at some stage? We might think about the historiography, the historical writing too, and splitting historians and others into camps. Some might see optimistic views of the old regime, thinking Tsarism had a potentiality to change. But we might also think of pessimists, people who thought the revolution was coming. It's just a question of when. These different views of Russian history and the interpretations that come are one of the reasons why the subject that I'm talking about today is such a rich and interesting one for us all to think about. There are, of course, many, many different writings on the revolution that are extremely important. The centenary of the revolution occurred, of course, in 2017, only several years ago, and it unleashed a torrent of various historical writings, a slew of new books, and indeed other types of materials. Just to mention a few of those that have really informed this series of recordings, one of them is Steve A. Smith's recent book, Russia in Revolution and Empire in Crisis, 1890 to 1928. Other interpretations that have informed my own view very much are Sheila Fitzpatrick, The Russian Revolution, available in several editions, Rex A. Wade's book, Russian Revolution, available in several editions, and indeed, very recently too, Mark D. Steinberg's book, Russia, The Russian Revolution, 1905 to 1921. But there are many, many others I could indeed cite here that are extremely important. At this stage, I am indeed going to stop, and I hope you have enjoyed that little snippet of Russian history.